You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 7th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. And we are actually live today because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, it's a tough day. You know, 75 years ago, Stalin defeated Germany. One of the biggest name researchers in the COVID virus was shot to death a few days ago, not too far from me at the University of Pittsburgh. So I guess I'm doing better than those people.
Yeah, you mentioned a victory in Europe day. It wasn't victory for Europe, was it? It was victory in Europe. Well, whose victory was it in Europe? But that's not actually what we're going to be talking about today, although it does bear relevance. I would suggest that the reason why we are going through the things that we are today is because we lost the war in Europe. What we're going to be talking about today is what's going on with the economy over there in America and the knock-on effect around the world, and also who it is that is actually making a huge profit out of this corona crisis while all the rest of us are fast approaching poverty. And rather than actually getting our research from Russia today, we're actually looking at research that's been carried out by the Center for Research on Globalization, which is a left-leaning think tank. But of course, you know, we talk about the same things that they do. We just have maybe slightly different ideas about the best way to deal with it. Well, Congress seems to be at war with the states. Only $150 billion of its nearly $3 trillion coronavirus relief package, a mere 5%, has been allocated to the 50 states, and they are not allowed to use it where they need it most, to plug the holes in their budgets caused by the mandatory shutdown. On April the 22nd, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he was opposed to additional federal aid to the states, and that his preference was to allow them to go bankrupt. No such threat looms over the banks, however, which have made out extremely well in this crisis. The Federal Reserve has dropped interest rates to 0.25%, eliminated reserve requirements, and relaxed capital requirements. Banks can now borrow effectively for free, without restrictions on the money's use. Following the playbook of the 2008-2009 bailout, they can make the funds available to their Wall Street cronies to buy up distressed Main Street assets at fire sale prices, while continuing to lend to credit card holders at 21%. Absolutely incredible, isn't it? People are, you know, they're tearing their hair out because they're losing their businesses, and here the banks are being told, hey, you can buy all those businesses up and you don't even have to pay any interest on it. This is absolutely disgusting, Matt, isn't it?
Well, the average credit card interest rate is about 17% today. So this is pure profit. There's no money from the credit card company's coffers. And Mitch McConnell, I tell you, you know, being opposed to aid to the states and condemning spending and stuff like that, he has no problem with aid to corporations and banks, though. He has no difficulty with that. Remember, the Republicans are just as much our enemies as Democrats or Libertarians are.
Well, what about this $150 billion here? That's all that people are getting out of this $3 trillion relief package. Where is the rest of that money going? Is that going to the banks? Is just 5% of that money going to the states? Where is the other 95% going? Do you know?
You know, no scandal is real unless the press covers it. Since these are the same people who own the press, we're not going to find out. Obviously, there's corruption somewhere, And most Americans aren't going to have any idea or even know that it's a problem. You know, the day after this was declared, the banks received about $1 trillion, maybe a little bit more, from the Fed. We're getting 1,200. I haven't gotten mine yet. Lots of people haven't gotten theirs yet. And this is it's corruption. It's red tape. And it's the fact that these Republicans don't want this money to go out except to their friends.
Well, I think what the average person is getting, he's just expecting to get $1,200, and that hasn't arrived yet. I know people that are still waiting for it. But apparently, if there is a silver lining to all of this, it is that the Fed's relaxed liquidity rules have made it easier for state and local governments to set up their own publicly owned banks, something they should do post-haste to take advantage of the Fed's very generous new accommodation for banks. These public banks can then lend to local businesses, municipal agencies, and local citizens at substantially reduced rates, while replenishing the local government's coffers, recharging the Main Street economy and the government's revenue base. Now, this sounds pretty good to me. They can get the money in at 0%, and then they can lend it out at, I don't know, 1% rather than 17%, as you were saying, for the credit cards there. But somehow I don't think that's exactly what this is. So how do public banks differ from central banks, and what exactly are public banks that he's talking about here, Matt?
Well, he's making reference to the Bank of North Dakota, which is state-owned. It runs their budget. It has a great reputation. It's one of the reasons that state is so prosperous. It's, you know, they've never run a deficit or any kind of a debt. It's owned by the state. And any profits that they make are plowed right back into the state again. So it's essentially a nonprofit corporation. Setting those up is expensive because of the old reserve, you know, there's a certain amount in reserve, and that has to be put up front before they can be chartered. Because this has been eased, I'm not sure where he's getting this notion that it's going to be happening everywhere. There's only one other state that's thinking about it, and that's Hawaii. That's such a divided state, though. I'm not sure it would work there. North Dakota is very different ethnically in every other way. But I think that's what he's referring to. American states have proposed it, but only one state so far has actually done it.
So it's effectively nationalizing the bank. I mean, if that was to be done over here, that would be the British bank, and the profits would go to Britain, the country, rather than to private bank owners. Is that correct? It's like a nationalized bank, but for a state?
That's exactly it. Although in North Dakota's case, it was actually established as a state bank. Most Americans don't even know about it. The banking industry is absolutely up in arms about it. But at least locally, I went to the University of Nebraska, we're right by the Dakotas. It's an extremely popular institution. And most people think it's one of the reasons that North Dakota has done so well financially, even during the crisis of 2008. They came out of it with flying colors because of the state bank. There's no profit. There's no interest except for just basic operating expenses. They take care of all budgetary issues. And you know, the major banking cults are terrified of those guys.
Interesting that the left are advocating for a nationalist idea there. Well, payments going to state and local governments from the Coronavirus Relief Fund under the CARES Act may be used only for coronavirus-related expenses. They may not be used to cover expenses that were accounted for in their most recently approved budgets as of March 2020. The problem is that nearly everything local governments do is funded through their most recently approved budgets, and that funding will come up painfully short for all of the states due to increased costs and lost revenues forced by the coronavirus shutdown. Unlike the federal government, which can add $1 trillion to the federal debt every year without fear of retribution, states and cities are required to balance their budgets. And then you've put here, or what happens? Are they invaded? What state has a balanced budget? The Fed has opened a municipal liquidity facility that may buy their municipal bonds, but this is still short-term debt, which must be repaid when due. Selling bonds will not fend off bankruptcy for states and cities that must balance their books. Do you think these states will actually end up going bankrupt? I mean, that was a bit of a callous thing to say, wasn't it? Just let the states go bankrupt? Or is that a good idea even for them to go bankrupt? And what do you mean here by, you know, what's going to happen if they don't balance their budget? What would happen?
There's, you know, many states, even in their constitution, say that they have to have a balanced budget. None of them are, except for North Dakota. And the reason is that they simply put things off budget. The governor may submit a balanced budget. Doesn't mean it's going to work out that way. They just hide and rename the debts. I mean, the states are several trillion dollars in debt, though the numbers don't say that. And you have two things here. This author is very naive that somehow if states don't spend this money the way the federal government does, what's going to happen to them? They're not getting cut off, you know, and then here, you know, what happens if they don't submit a balanced budget? Nothing's going to happen. There's all kinds of spending limits on the federal government, too, that they simply ignore, or they put it into the private sector or something like that. So, you know, I his point is interesting only in the sense that he's very naive, but it shows you that the federal government is you know, having the Fed print this money and it's being given to states only if they control absolutely where this money goes, and it can't really go to anything useful because, as he says, 99% of what state budgets do is the stuff they're not allowed to spend it on. That's exactly where the money is needed.
Well, I think I have an idea of where that money's been going, where that 95% of the $3 trillion has gone, because America's super rich have seen their wealth rise by $282 billion in the last 3 weeks. A new report from the Institute for Policy Studies found that while tens of millions of Americans have lost their jobs during the coronavirus pandemic, America's ultra-wealthy elite have seen their net worth surge by $282 billion in just 23 days. This is despite the fact that the economy is expected to contract by 40% this quarter. That's almost a half. The report also noted that between 1980 and 2020, the tax obligations of America's billionaires, measured as a percentage of their wealth, decreased by 79%. In the last 30 years, US billionaire wealth soared by over 1,100%, while median household wealth increased by barely 5%. I thought this was supposed to trickle down, Matt. This was supposed to trickle down to everyone. That was the capitalist idea, wasn't it? What's going on here?
Well, that phrase was coined by Walter Mondale in a debate with Ronald Reagan in 1984. The 5% increase is very, very high. It's higher than inflation anyway. That, you know, billionaires are getting government money, Fed money, and their tax obligations are going down. As of right now, only about 15% of American corporations have any tax obligation whatsoever. With the complicated tax system, it's very easy to manipulate the figures. I don't know if these billionaires, remember, this is wealth, not income. I don't know if they're putting money into gold. They're putting money, rare items. I don't know what they're doing. We talked about last week about these guys digging bunkers. So they're obviously very, they're very worried about it. But I certainly hope they're wrong. This 40% figure, I mean, that's like Ukraine in 1992. I mean, that's fourth world status if this is correct. I don't know how they came to that, that figure. And I didn't see where the policy studies people explained how their money, where their money came from, the billionaires' money came from, unless it is from this bailout. Just like in 2008, it all went to gambling and speculation and bonuses and everything else. It wasn't used anything productively. This is one of the most outrageous proofs of oligarchy that I've ever come across.
Did you mean to say there that the 5% that the wages have actually gone up for households is barely 5%? Do you mean to say that that hasn't even kept up with inflation?
I guarantee you it doesn't. It depends on who you read, though. It depends on how it's figured. It's also gender-based. It's racially-based. It's regionally-based. I mean, rural people have seen their incomes collapse. Men, especially middle-aged men, have seen a huge decrease. The only group of people who are seeing increases are young college-educated women and these multi-billionaires. You know, whenever there's a crisis, whenever people get scared, very, very wealthy people. I mean, this is what happened in ancient Rome, too. Wealthy people end up having servitors, people running to them for protection. It's a feudal state now. The worst forms of feudalism without any of the good part. It's pure oligarchy.
Well, I can't imagine the economy contracting by 40%. I mean, we've got over 50% of people in Britain at the moment are either on benefits or are furloughed. And that's over half the people aren't working. So you could imagine that it will it will contract by something like 40 or 50%. In 1990, the total wealth held by America's billionaire class was $240 billion. Today, that number stands at $2.95 trillion, which is just a minimum figure. Thus, America's billionaires accrued more wealth in just the past 3 weeks than they made in total prior to 1980. As a result, just three people, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, and Berkshire Hathaway's Warren Buffett, own as much wealth as the bottom half of all US households combined. That's absolutely obscene that those three men own it more than half of all US households combined. Is that really true, Matt? Are they really that wealthy?
I think, you know, it's worse than that, because these billionaires are able to hide money. They're able to put it into art and rare items and things like that. They could hide money all over the world. This is just a figure that they're willing to admit. God knows where this money is. I mean, they're involved in drugs. They're, you know, this is 2008. The only thing that kept the stock exchange going was drug money from Latin America and Central Asia. So I think it's far worse than that. And these people haven't even begun to flex their muscle. If they get scared and they get spooked, they're going to start using this power in ways we haven't even thought of yet.
They've probably got more money than some third world countries have. The Institute for Policy Studies report paints a picture of a modern day oligarchy. And then you put, where have they been? Exactly. I mean, we've been talking about the oligarchy for years as nationalists, where the super rich have captured legislative and executive power, controlling what laws are passed. The report discusses what it labels a new wealth defense industry, where billionaires are paying millions to dodge billions in taxes, with teams of accountants, lawyers, lobbyists, and asset managers helping them conceal their vast fortunes in tax havens and so-called charitable trusts. The result has been crippled social programs and a decrease in living standards and even a sustained drop in life expectancy, something rarely seen in history outside of major wars or famines. Few Americans believe their children will be better off than they were. Statistics suggest they are right. And they pointed out here these so-called charitable trusts, and we're always hearing about how these great philanthropists and how charitable these people are. And there's a reason why we are being told that, because billionaires very theatrically donate a fraction of what they used to give back in taxes, making sure to generate maximum publicity for their actions. And they secure this positive coverage of themselves by stepping in to keep influential news organizations afloat. A December investigation by Mint Press found that Gates had donated over $9 million to The Guardian, over $3 million to NBC Universal, $4.5 million to NPR, $1 million to Al Jazeera, and a staggering $49 million to the BBC, in particular their Media Action Programme. Some, like Bezos, prefer to simply outright purchase news organisations themselves, changing the editorial stance to unquestioning loyalty to their new owners. And that's incredible. It's not just them. The Arabs have bought newspapers over here in Britain, and of course, the editorial policy then changes. And these are the things that the general public read to find out what's going on in the world. And it's basically what these rich people that have bought the newspapers want them to think.
There's no doubt that most people have never even heard of Mint Press. And these numbers are just from one man. This is just Bill Gates. I mean, the man bought, you know, he pours money into Planned Parenthood. You know, when he and Warren Buffett did this a long time ago, I guess when 2005 or so, it was front page news. They'd given $1 billion. The fact that he bought these places, you know, these published reports, these are extremely influential charities. And, you know, when they donate a massive amount of money, they essentially bought it. They're put on the board and these groups do what they're told. Anything having to do with the production of ideas, these guys are buying. And so journalists and academics are going to have to do some soul searching. What side are they going to come down on? Because the fact that this Institute for Policy Studies actually used the word oligarchy, which was a forbidden word for a long time, like depression, means that this is getting into the mainstream thanks to us. A lot of people are listening to us who will never admit it. and they're seeing how our ideas fly, and then they take them and promote them as their own. They work with ideas the same way they work with money in businesses. It's theft. And again, if the media doesn't report it, the scandal doesn't exist.
Oh, it's amazing that Bill Gates donates $49 million to the BBC. The BBC is supposed to be funded by license payers so that it doesn't actually have any bias. It's paid for by all the British people. And then you got Bill Gates as well that sends them $49 million. It's no wonder that their recent interview that they did with him, they were just basically grovelling to him and not asking him any searching questions. Well, this spike in billionaire wealth comes amidst an unprecedented economic crash. 26.5 million Americans have filed for unemployment over the last 5 weeks, and that number is expected to continue to rise dramatically. While the super rich are holed up in their mansions and yachts, the 49 to 62 million Americans designated as essential workers must continue to risk their lives to keep society functioning, even as many of them do not even earn as much as the $600 weekly increase in unemployment benefits the CARES Act stipulates. And with a FFP3 mask setting you back at $65, and it's supposed to be disposable, you're only supposed to wear it the once. I mean, these essential workers, they couldn't even afford to keep themselves in masks for the week. They would actually run out of the money that they actually get paid. And you've got a prediction here that you've made, Matt, about this. Do you want to go into that?
Well, given everything we've just said, there will be a small minority of people who start talking like this. So what's going to happen is they're going to start hiring PR firms. They're going to get academics and journalists writing these puff pieces, refuting all of this right-wing conspiracy stuff. You're going to see false flag attacks. You're going to see even more racial division as they have machine gun a bunch of blacks on a playground somewhere or something like that. Anything to get people's minds off who really rules us. There'll be distractions all over the place, especially in technology and entertainment. This is my prediction, because as more and more people start using words like oligarchy or plutocracy, these guys didn't get to be billionaires because they're nice or stupid. They got there because they know how to manipulate people, and they're going to use this media clout to do everything in their power to distract attention from it. And like when Gates gave all that money to Planned Parenthood, he was on the front page of the paper. They're going to be promoting this all the time. And academics, big universities, especially the Ivy Leagues, are going to be given huge amounts of money to come and say how this is all just conspiracy theory nonsense. And you'll have a complete bipartisan acceptance of that. Because the American left long ago abandoned the working class because it was too damn white and ethnic, and supported, non-whites and homosexuals and feminists as a substitute. So you're going to see bipartisan support. Liberals all of a sudden aren't going to care about wealth inequality in the next couple of years. I guarantee it.
Well, they seem more interested in promoting homosexualism and feminism and diversity and everything else, don't they? I mean, this sort of stuff doesn't get very much publicity. Well, the next article is actually written by Ron Paul. The Federal Reserve previously announced it would make unlimited purchases of Treasury securities, thus encouraging Congress and the President to increase spending and debt. With some members of Congress talking about another multi-trillion dollar stimulus bill, and with President Trump proposing a $2 trillion infrastructure plan as a way to get Americans back to work, it is obvious and not surprising that Congress and President Trump gleefully agree with Powell's advice, and that's Jerome Powell, the Fed chair. Increasing the purchase of federal debt is not the only action the Fed has taken in a desperate attempt to keep the economy afloat. Since the coronavirus lockdown began in early March, the Fed has greatly expanded its balance sheet. The Federal Reserve has also launched an unprecedented program to loan money directly to businesses. And really, these businesses, they need grants. They don't need loans. That's just going to delay the business collapsing, I would have thought, Matt.
Well, like I said, when this happens and you have bankruptcies, small business, medium-sized businesses are going under, that just means that the big businesses are going to grow. So every one of these crises or panics or depressions create a pure and pure level of oligarchy. And very much like in the Great Depression, these middle-class investors get wiped out. And pensions that are invested in certain things get wiped out. And even as they can continue to print money, and inflation becomes a problem later on, and most certainly will, Well, these guys are heavily invested in things like gold and alternative energies, things that are always going to go up. And depending on how they bet their money, they can make money off the loss of value in a security. And it doesn't matter because these people know no matter what happens to them, they have the power and they have the connections to get bailed out, either by the taxpayers or the Fed or both. And given their media control, very few people are going to find out about it.
Well, the Fed wants these companies to go bust because then they can be bought up by the banks, can't they? That's the whole point of when they loan this money out. The money doesn't actually represent anything until somebody can't pay it back, and then it actually represents the property that gets repossessed. While some states are beginning to end the lockdowns, it may be months or even another year before all the lockdowns are finally ended. It is unlikely that the economy will completely recover after the shutdown ends. The economy was teetering on the brink of a recession months before anyone heard of coronavirus. Last September, a panicked Fed began emergency infusions of cash into the repurchasing market, which is where banks make short-term loans to each other. The Fed's balance sheet expansion also began in September. The Fed was also pushing interest rates down before the coronavirus panic, and it will likely keep rates at or even below zero long after the crisis related to the shutdown subsides. This is something that we've been pointing out for a while, haven't we? Or you have been, Matt, in particular, about this recession that was coming up anyway. And this coronavirus is very fortuitous for them because they can blame it on that.
That's one of the first things I said when this thing first happened. And within 24 hours, the Fed had announced massive loans, which are really grants if they get bailed out anyway, of all this money. And they're just entries in a balance sheet. And these short-term loans, these are grants at pretty much zero interest. They don't have to pay this back. They're going to get bailed out. And again, as you already mentioned, as small and medium-sized businesses go under, they're going to get bought up at pennies on the dollar. This is how oligarchy took over in Russia and Ukraine in the 1990s and continues to run Ukraine today. So debt is a weapon that these people use. They don't have to worry about it. They're simply beyond that. But ordinary people do. And so you're going to see an increasingly pure oligarchy to the point where there's really a tiny handful at the top and an absolutely immiserated working class on the bottom.
Well, if we're going to be looking at Ukraine and Russia, what happened when the Soviet Union fell, I mean, that does actually give me hope because, you know, they did come up with Putin and he did manage to turn things around. So, you know, we may see something like that happen here. But as each day passes by, data pours in, revealing the immense economic damage caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Most politicians and economic pundits will put the blame for this economic hurricane that has blasted tens of millions into unemployment on coronavirus lockdowns. Fitch Ratings has given a brief snapshot of the unfolding economic catastrophe, which it predicts will last well into the 2020s. World GDP is now expected to fall by 3.9% in 2020, a recession of unprecedented depth in the post-war period. This is twice as large as the decline anticipated in our early April GEO update and will be twice as severe as the 2009 recession. The decline in GDP equates to a $2.8 trillion fall in global income levels relative to 2019 and a loss of $4.5 trillion relative to our pre-virus expectations of 2020 global GDP. Fitch expects Eurozone GDP to decline by 7%, US GDP by 5.6%, and UK GDP by 6.3% in 2020. Yet at the beginning of this year, the financial media and political classes around the world were making rosy forecasts how we were going to experience moderate economic growth this year, built upon solid economic foundations. There was no cause for worry or alarm, just let global capital work its magic and trickle-down economics would ensure living standards would rise for all. And what a shaky foundation it was all built upon, Matt. All it needed was a virus, a pandemic, something that we've always had every, I don't know, 50, 60 years or so, every 100 years or so. Our history is full of these things. And that's all it took to bring it down.
You know, on my Patreon page, I have several articles on the on these rating agencies like Standard & Poor and Fitch and everything else. Their predictions are usually wrong, But the point of their predictions isn't to tell the truth. The point is to signal the wealthy what to do with their money. So in predicting this drastic fall in GDP, which may or may not happen, what they're really saying is signaling to their friends, get your money out of the market, get your money out of security, and get it into gold, get it into something that isn't going to go anywhere. You payday loan corporations, stuff like that. So these rating agencies, these are the people who were partially responsible for what happened in 2008, that they were deliberately lying about the condition of different investments, which eventually brought the system down, and they all got bailed out anyway. People refer to, you know, Standard & Poor's, their analysis, as if it's some gospel from on high, and it has nothing to do with reality. It has to do with these guys essentially being the canary in the mine as far as the wealthy are concerned. That's really what the press is now. That's what polls are. That's what all these predictions are. If they say it's going to happen, then investors get shaky, investors get scared, and so it definitely does happen. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They wouldn't say this unless they were well aware of that.
Well, 4 months after those rosy predictions, a global health pandemic has revealed how shallow, brittle, and unstable were the economic foundations of global capitalism. These foundations were built upon infinitely low interest rates, an exponential rise in debt, both public and private, sending global debt over the $250 trillion mark, and a massive increase in social and economic inequality. The world economy was slowing down during 2019 and heading towards a global recession. Japan's economy had already entered recession territory in the last quarter of 2019. Meanwhile, PMI data from China and Germany indicated that they were hovering just outside recession territory. The global economy at the end of 2019 was teetering on the brink and just needed a catalyst or a pin to pop the everything bubble, which has seen massive inflation in the prices of paper assets across the globe, ranging from stocks and bonds to derivatives such as collateralized loan obligations. The anemic economic growth experienced by global capitalism since the last financial crisis, which was a mere 12 years ago, has been based upon a gigantic expansion of the global money supply, as central banks and governments mistakenly believe that the only way to sustain our debt-fueled economic system was to create ever more debt. Well, personally, I think we need a jubilee. We need a cancellation of debt. That's what we always used to do. Every 50 years, all debts used to be cancelled. Everything was went back to zero, and that prevented anything like this ever happening. And that's the Christian way to deal with it. How would you deal with this, Matt?
Well, I've been preaching debt forgiveness for a long time. In royalist societies, Germany and Russia in particular, debt forgiveness was a day-to-day thing. The redemption payment to the serfs after the freedom of 1861 were simply canceled. The banks cancel each other's debts all the time. That's what these bailouts are. That's what all this quantitative easing is. They're canceling their debts all the time. They never have to worry about the results of what they do. I predicted this in 2008, that the regime is going to learn absolutely nothing from this. Not to mention the fact that they're using language that the American population doesn't use. It gets more and more technical as time goes on. And I mean, they don't know what a prime rate is or what the definition of savings really is. They use increasingly esoteric terminology so they could simply communicate with each other without anyone knowing. Anyone being the wiser. And so they look up to these economists and rating agencies like their gurus.
So the banks actually, they get to have a jubilee, yeah, but everybody else doesn't. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.